first item on our agenda is FB1, approval of the 2019-2020 operating budget revisions.
Okay. So this is a standard exercise that we go through each year once the carry forward is approved or finalized during the closing process. And so I'm waiting for the slides to come up. As I'm waiting for that, though, let me point out on your action item, there was one minor typo. And I talked with Julia. It was very minor. It says total carry forward generated fiscal year 2019. It said 2018. It should be 2019. So Julia is going to correct that before it goes to the full board, but I wanted to bring it to your attention. And so it looks like we're having a few problems with the slides, so let me go ahead and work through this. So the total carry...
You do have the slides. We have a copy of the slides.
Oh, okay, good. Good. So the total carry forward generated for fiscal year 2019 was approximately $30.6 million. And there we go. And what we're seeking approval today of this $30.6 million are budget revisions. The first one, which is an increase to existing operating reserves, that's the auxiliaries such as parking and bookstore. When they generate a surplus, we transfer that into their capital reserve so they can perform renovations throughout the year. And then the other expenditure allocations include academic affairs, about $8.7 million. That would be maintained and controlled by the university provost, and she would make the decision on how that is allocated out to the academic units and what she chooses to do with that. The other items, it's interesting that we were just talking about infrastructure. We're recommending that we put $1 million into an infrastructure repair fund. And what, again, we mean by infrastructure are basically the steam and chill underground systems and basically just our plant on campus, maintaining that. We're also then recommending that $750,000 go into an IT fund. Again, that's basically IT infrastructure, your computers, your servers, software, hardware, all of those items. Administrative infrastructure, that's $300,000. Again, that would be controlled by myself and making decisions with the provost and the president as to how we allocate that. Basically, I'm doing some review of my organizations, so that's going to cost some money, and that's just a pool of money for me to allocate out. Our budget model and our associated budget software, that's going to, we've allocated about $1 million for that, for consulting contracts and, again, the budgeting software. And then $295,000 for the capital campaign kickoff. So in total, those are around $14.6 million and of the $30 million in carryover. And I think initially, if I remember right, when Ann presented the budget back in June to the Regents, she was estimating carry forward to be about $25 million. So actually, we ended up with a higher carry forward than what she was estimating at that time.
Thank you. Any questions?
Susan, can you clarify when we talk about needing an infrastructure repair fund, is that the same, what Jennifer and Brian brought up, is that infrastructure, is that the same thing? So you're hoping money from the state, but you're also wanting to set aside $1 million in the budget. Is that, what would that be for? What does infrastructure actually mean?
Just maintaining our facilities on campus, our HVAC systems, our roofs, our roads, all of those items. And yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm going to give you a very specific example for this from last year, and Brian can add color. But we had an issue with the HVAC and piping system in the Fine Arts Center to the tune of, how much do we invest in that?
Well, about $300,000.
because it was leaking water into faculty offices, performance spaces. And if we didn't have that money set aside to address that issue, we would have not been able to react either as quickly or deal with the issue. And remember, we're not even talking about a 1% contingency. This is a, a $500 million, a million is really like, you know, a drop in the ocean. But we got to have something there.
So this is your quick fix fund. I mean, when you can't get the other funding in other ways, this is your quick fix.
And the hope is that if the asset preservation pool were available, we might be able to take $1 million and turn it into $3 million with state investment.
Because typically what CPE will do, what they've done in the past with these type of funds, if it does actually get approved, is they would allow you, if we started projects in July, they would let you count that towards the match. So I think it's really important that we set this aside for those projects.
The CPE ask is only about 10% of the assessed need for the entire state.
So right.
Even if the entire CPE ask is funded, we're still way behind.
If the full CPE ask were available, it would be $37 million from the state, matched with about $17 million from us. So $54 million. That would be a huge 10% way to address that $500 million hole. But so then it goes from a $500 million down to $450 million in asset repair required.
If memory serves me correctly, I think local school boards are required to have 2 or 3% of a contingency fund for this sort of thing. So I'd say this is.
It's a big problem in higher education here in the state. Very large.
And what about, what's in the administrative infrastructure?
As I was saying, so those would be things like studies that I'm performing to try and bring in some folks from the outside to look at some of the administrative units to see that we're operating as efficiently as we can, and looking at the organizations and how they may be restructured slightly. I can also, I was talking with Klaus and David yesterday on these subjects, and we spent a good bit of time. I don't know that 300,000 is the right number for those studies. Maybe it's 100,000. And then what I would do is shift that 200,000 into the plant infrastructure. Because the more we can put into that bucket, the better we will be. And the same with the IT infrastructure. Working with Greg, if 750 is not the right number and it turns out to be 250, we would take the 500,000 and again shift it into the plant infrastructure. Because the more we can get into that pot, the better.
Can you elaborate a little bit, or Greg, what you have planned for the IT infrastructure?
It's to address our lengthy replacement cycles primarily. We've got probably close to a 20-year replacement cycle on some of our core equipment in the network, and that would be a hell of a boost to kind of raise that up to a more sustainable level. Plus, we've got probably a 10 to 15-year replacement cycle on a lot of our wireless infrastructure as well. And there's many other needs up and down the stack. We've got servers, we've got storage, we've got data center equipment. It's many things, honestly. Sure.
So, can just for me again, can you elaborate how the determination was made for these specific allocations? So we had a $30 million pot. 13 of that was in the existing fiscal year budget already, correct? That's my understanding. We're taking, based on existing policy, 2.591 roughly goes into another pot, and the remainder of that now, the 14.597, is an allocation in the current, a reallocation in the current fiscal year. So this has to be spent or allocated or put aside before the end of the current fiscal year, or it becomes carry forward as well. Correct? But how is the determination made of what amounts went where?
Okay, well, the increase to the existing operating reserves, that's in policy.
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I had already specified that that was by policy.
Again, those are just the auxiliary functions of the university, just maintaining their surplus to do renovations to their facilities and such. And we always bring those revisions back to the board as well during the year. The other ones, David, they were made, the academic affairs. Once we paid the bills, and what I mean by paying the bills, looking at how much the ramp implementation is going to cost, how much we needed for the capital campaign kickoff, how much we were estimating on the other infrastructure, the academic affairs carried over the surplus that they generated. Okay, so as far as an estimate of what we needed in the, in working with the provost, we looked at what we had done in prior years. And in prior years, if my memory serves me, I think that there was usually somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 towards plant infrastructure. And I increased that slightly, again, working with the provost, because I knew that we were going to have this matching program with the state. IT typically in past years received somewhere between $250,000 and $500,000. I increased that slightly because of the infrastructure needs we have in IT. The administrative infrastructure, that was basically just a recognition of the fact that the administrative side of the university was not receiving any type of carry forward. So that was basically just earmarked for needs across the administrative units.
So I understand that, and I have no grievance at all with the idea that we have allocated carry forward. But this is a process that will go away as the ramp model is fully implemented, is that correct?
I think what you'll see is carry forwards will, because part of the ramp model is that the budgets, as you move through it, will start adjusting themselves, so the carry forward will become a thing of the past. Okay, and really the budgets will become more realistic, so there will not be the carry forward. Now, there probably is going to always, the units, as they become more successful, we're hoping that they will generate more money than their revenue budget, that they will start exceeding their revenue budget. That's the hope of the incentive-based model. What we have to do, we have to develop a new carry-forward policy that runs in tandem with a RCM model. And we're in the process of doing that with Huron.
And the reason that I don't want to keep beating on this, but it seems to me that there's an awful lot of discretionary spending that's allowed through this process. And when we have, and I'm going to say it this way, we have $30 million, but yet we have a budget deficit. It doesn't look like that it just doesn't look like we're operating in an ideal fashion. And then you talk about discretion over 300, when in reality you have discretion over 2 million that you can dole however you wish. And when we talk about considerations for other departments, you're giving consideration to units that you oversee, but not units that you don't necessarily, outside of academics. Because there are other units on this campus that aren't given any consideration in this fund. Now, I mentioned this yesterday, and I hate to bring it up again today in this session, but when we talk about, you know, there are other avenues for other groups on this campus to request money, and at what point do they get equal consideration in this process? And I realize that this is married to the past, and it's unfortunately something you inherited, and that's why I'm saying I'm going to support this, maybe, but I cannot see how we can continue as a university with this gross amount of carry forward and make the argument that we need to get rid of people at the same time.
So I'll address this one directly. I think you're absolutely right. This is an artifact from a carry forward policy that used to exist. I would argue that carry forward is an incredibly inefficient way to allocate resources. It doesn't make sense long term. But we have to, again, have a glide path down. We could make a strategic choice as an institution to cover the $8.9 million gap in our budget with the $8.6 million we have there for academic affairs, or the other half of it. But that choice to bring our expenditure down to not use carry forward to fill the hole would have real implications, right? It would mean there are things that we need that we can't do. It would inflict immediate pain and choices there. And I would argue that this is a pretty conservative infrastructure investment fund. When you think about $1 million out of a $500 million need, that's minuscule. I think the other part to remember about this, as we move toward full implementation of the RAMP model, there are pieces that still have to get done, right? And now that Susan's here, the more fulsome implementation will be on July 1. We have to think, this is part of the exercise of thinking differently about our budgets, right? We used to think, well, I'm not going to spend it, so I get it back next year. What we have to think about is, how do I generate more revenue so there's more revenue for me to spend next year? And the distinction between allocations for academic affairs and the others, if we don't upgrade our IT, that's $750,000. That has a direct effect on our academic operations. If we don't have $1 million to fix a leaky classroom, that has a direct effect on our academic operations. And so I know it looks like there's a lot of money there, but in a $500 million budget, $350 million budget, that's about 1.5%.
So I want to stress that my comments do not reflect my disdain for any of the amounts.
Yeah.
It's more of the way that they've been determined. I completely agree that infrastructure repair, I've had these conversations with Brian, and it's tremendously underfunded. That is absolutely not an argument. I think we have to go on trust related to IT, the administrative infrastructure. There needs to be some leniency. I'm talking about the method of allocation. That is my concern. And my understanding yesterday was capital campaign kickoff. That is the only budget line for that, but it is not a supplement to that. And to me, that probably should have been considered initially in the budget. It's just okay. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with that as well. I think it should be at least that amount. But this is about discretionary money, and there is a flag out there when you have a $2 million discretion, regardless of the purpose of the initial allocation. And I'm just saying, we are taking steps to move away from that. Let's continue to take those steps.
I do believe that the Executive Budget Council, along with the process that we have in place, we've never had a more transparent process for looking at numbers, making strategic decisions, and making those recommendations. This is no longer three people sitting around a table making choices. This is a conversation that involves governance, it involves faculty, it involves staff, and I would argue that as we move toward it, some of these decisions are going to be influenced by that group. You can't get there all at once. And so, point well taken. We can do better or continue to do better each year, I think. At the same time, there also is a responsibility that I have and that the Executive Vice President has to make choices sometimes that if I were making a self-serving choice, I might not make. So for example, the $1 million in infrastructure. One of the problems that we have as a university is that we didn't put $5 million every year in perpetuity into an infrastructure reinvestment fund. Why? Because you won't see it today. We'll shift it over here. We'll not make a difficult staffing decision. And what happens is, over time, that deferred maintenance builds up to a place where it becomes where we are today. And so I agree that we need to have a broad process, but there are also times, I think, when the immediate need versus the long-term need is a tough call to make, and that's why there is some discretion there, so that we don't do just what is popular, but what's necessary.
Were the RAMP budget committees involved in this decision process?
No.
In the future, do you anticipate that they will be?
As we talked yesterday, Klaus, what we have to do, again, we were in a compressed timeline this year, What I'm going to do, I've been working with Becca, is we're going to start going ahead and setting up either bi-monthly or monthly meetings with the Executive Budget Committee year-round. So that, because there's timing issues, and if they're not meeting year-round, and you have to make these decisions pretty quickly, in order to have that input from the Executive Budget Committee, I've got to set the meetings up now. So going forward, it will be a year-round process.
Very good. Okay.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Can I say one thing? I think less time than precision, I think, of Board of Regents is that we don't ask questions that we don't ask in the meetings and we don't do our homework. But I think Susan, because she met with Klaus and David and answered some questions for me this morning, that these Board of Regents that you see up here do their homework and check into things and have questions and try to find the answers so that we're well prepared when we come to these meetings.
If I could add to that, there's a notion of rubber stamping that I've heard discussed. I will guarantee you, Klaus and David, the 2 hours that they spent yesterday with Susan,
I was trying to convince Susan,
aren't rubber stamping anything. Julie, you and I had a conversation before to get answers to your questions, and so for those individuals out there who are critique the Regents for not being engaged or not going through materials with a fine-tooth comb, Susan can guarantee them the materials are not just read, they're digested, they're critiqued, and questions are answered.
Yeah, I'll echo this, and it may sound that I'm being tremendously critical. I'm echoing the voices in my own ears from prior weeks or from the time that this material is given to me. And also, we do a tremendous amount of work. The number of hours that we put in to prior to the meeting with Susan on getting some flow of how I want to ask the questions. I don't want to waste her time. And she gave a tremendous amount of time yesterday to Klaus and I. And I'm convinced never was able to eat lunch because of that, because I know she was going into a meeting right after hours that went over. So it may sound like I'm being critical, but in reality, there are things that I need to make sure are part of the record based on what we discussed yesterday to give additional clarity where we thought that there may be some confusion. Now, and specifically today, mine were around EX2 and FB1, and that's one of the reasons we spent a lot of time on these in discussion, and it still has a tendency to color my vote as a member of this committee. And I appreciate that time. I think this effort for transparency is far above and beyond. And believe me, I can tell you, we are not a rubber stamp.
may I add to that? I'm reminded of Regent Nichols' article that he shared with me and several other board members about constructive friction and the relationship between a board and a university. The university also, this is not a defensive posture. What we want to do is have a give and a take and a questioning and a pushback that allows us to get to the best possible decision-making. That's true with the Regents, that's true with Faculty Senate, that's true with Staff Senate as well, and also with our student government. This is a healthy conversation, not a negative thing, and it occurs both here in public forums, but individually through our individual relationships as well.
Can I add something in addition to that? This has been the right type of conversation that we should be having. There's something that I hope that we as Regents keep in perspective, and we share that with our constituents. And that is that probably the most difficult thing in life within an organization is change management. And this is what we're going through. Think about what has been inherited that you have to bring forward. And you think about where we're going, and there are a lot of emotions in that, there are a lot of perspectives in that, and that's the process of change management. And some people manage it well, and some people don't manage it. And that's okay, that's to be understood. But as a governing board, our responsibility is to understand the challenges that is on the administration to lead and run the company, the university, okay? And what oversight, strategic oversight that we should give that doesn't really get into, it's totally just my constituency, because you have two responsibilities. You may have your constituency, but you have a fiduciary responsibility for the university. And when I think about where we started, when Dr. Cavoti came in, we said we're going to go to the RAD system. I mean, we've made tremendous progress already. And I think all of you are saying that based on the transparency that is there. The objective is, how do we keep getting better? The other thing is, it's really nice to hear that we're sitting here having a conversation, and at some point in time, we want this to go away, but we also want to understand that the future university that we have, that we're responsible for, is going to have to be able to create more revenue that helps it becomes always self-sustaining, given all the other noises out there and issues that we have to face with, given the government oversight. So this is very, very healthy. It's very positive. It's the right kind of conversations, the right discussions, the right questions. But it is a part of this huge change management. And we have to tell our constituents, we have to understand it ourselves, because it is not going, we're not going to get there overnight. But really, please evaluate the progress. The 3 years that I've been involved, unbelievable what I see now compared to what I saw in the beginning. And it really makes me feel good that we're in the direction to give the right oversight that's appropriate and necessary.
As usual, George puts things in proper perspective, and I certainly agree with what he said, having been in the middle of things the last 2.5 years. And there are more things to come and more battles to fight as we bring positive change, and this is all part of it.
Okay, any further discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve FB1.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I'm not on.
Sheldon just went.
It took a break, so we
might. Just took a break, so we might have to wait.
We'll wait for Sheldon to get it.
While we're waiting, I just want to comment. I really appreciate Susan taking the time to answer the questions, and this has happened before. And I'm really grateful that I do get the information I'm asking for.
I'm thankful I don't have to provide it. No, the level. So, and this is. I mean, this is important for folks to see.
If you think about the significance of a 24-hour turnaround for a 2-hour block. And how difficult that is with anybody on this campus. I really appreciate that. I really do.
And the level of granularity with which she can answer those questions that we're not going to do, we don't need to have a conversation about here, but it informs the understanding of the overall challenge. I think it's helpful. Susan walks me through these things. Same thing is true with the provost. And everybody who works with me understands that we have a process through which regions go to work with folks. And it has to do with the committee structure and how we efficiently allocate scarce resource of time of leadership. At the same time, anytime a region has a question, it gets answered. And the goal is to answer it quickly and on the spot and in a way that is puts the issue either to rest or informs in such a way that we have a productive conversation. These are really technical issues that take time to understand. And particularly when you have a lay board who over time comes to understand the intricacies of a system that's not like business but is like a university. It just there's an education process, that, especially given the transformations in which we've been engaged.
Okay. FB1, we have a motion by George for approval of the operating budget revisions. Do I have a second?
Oh, second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? So we have 3.7.
Yep.
All right. The motion carries.
On to FB2, approval of personnel actions.
I promise I won't ask a question. I was going to say, yeah. Don't worry, I will not say nothing.
Okay, so since the last meeting, Regent McKinney and I spoke about the format of the personnel actions and made some minor modifications so that what he asked for me to do is sort it in such a way that the highest rise to the top, so that the regents would probably put more scrutiny on the larger compensation and personnel type actions. So really that's the only change that we made to both the personnel actions and the one-time payments. So you'll see the dates that they run through. And again, both of the reports are in descending order and subtotaled as well by individual.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on?
I move to accept.
All right. Got a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor of FB2? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? That motion carries. All right. On to FB3, acceptance of auditor's reports and financial statements for WKYU-TV and WKYU-FM radio.
Okay, I'm just going to say a few high-level statements, and then I'll turn it over to our auditor. So again, the same was the case with our university's audit. It was a clean audit with an unqualified opinion. That's the best you can get. No audit findings. And again, I'll turn it over to Brad Shaley, who is our managing director from PRO.
Good morning. Thank you. Glad to be here again to walk through the financial statements, some highlights. I don't know if we have a slideshow or
not. Sorry, Fred. Yeah.
Walking through the financial statements of the TV and radio station. So I have a brief presentation here. I do have copies of the financial statements as well if you have any questions on those. But again, the main deliverables here that you'll see are the actual audited financial statements for WKYU-TV and WKYU-FM radio. If you look at the actual financial statements, they've gotten to be quite thick over the past few years with the requirement to include more information about pensions and OPEB, and all of the background and assumptions that go into that. We also do a certification for the CPB, so they are required to, you're required to submit certain financial information and other information online, and we do a certification of that as well. This just kind of gives you a high level of some of the methodology and approach that we take. Again, similar approach that we do for the university, just obviously on a much smaller scale as we're just the stations themselves. As far as reporting these, just a little bit of a timeline here. So they were issued in December for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2019. Again, I mentioned the certification required by the CPB that was completed earlier this month within the timeline. And as Susan mentioned, we do have unmodified opinions on both sets of the financial statements, so clean financial statements from that standpoint. This just gives a little bit of information on the financial balances and transactions during the year. So you didn't have to look through the full financial statements necessarily. The top section here is for the TV station. And again, comparing to the two most recent fiscal year ends. The bottom section is for FM radio. As you look at the top section, key things here really, you'll see the TV net position. That's essentially your equity is a negative position again, as it has been the past few years. That's again due to the pension and OPEB requirements to include those liabilities on there. And so if you think about the overall university liabilities for those, a portion of that gets allocated to the TV and radio based on the number of employees. And so you'll see that impact there. As you look at the revenue and expenses, again for the TV there in the upper third, you see TV revenue actually increased a little bit this year, year over year, so a positive sign there. The expenses increased pretty significantly, but pretty much all of that increase in expense is again related to pension and OPEB changes there. So there's a combination of factors that go into that, whether it's the overall liability increasing, and so you're seeing some impact there. There's also some of that is related to the percentage that's allocated. So depending on how many total university employees there are compared to the TV employees, that allocation percentage can increase or decrease as well. So you saw a little bit of that as the changes in the overall university employees, but TV was more consistent. So that change in net position was a decrease this year of about $661,000, but again, a lot of that is what I would call non-cash right now. Changes as it relates to the pension OPEB. The bottom half of the screen here, again, is for WKYUFM. And you'll see, again, here, they're in a little bit better position, just overall in your net position. You have a positive this year of $16,000. While the revenue decreased slightly for FM radio, you'll see that the expenses really slightly increased. But again, when you take out the pension and OPEB piece of that, your operating, what I'll call operating expenses, actually decreased. And so you'll see a positive change in net assets again this year of about $100,000. This is just a little bit of information that we're required to communicate as part of the audit process. Again, we do the audit under generally accepted auditing standards and under government auditing standards for the TV and radio as it's part of the university. As you look at the significant accounting policies, there really weren't any new significant accounting policies this year that were required both externally, nothing new internally either. There are significant estimates that are involved primarily in this pension and OPEB that we've talked about. There were no significant auditor judgments or any inconsistencies in the way that transactions were recorded. And again, no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in internal controls that we identified through our testing. This is really the last bit of information, again, required communication. Key things here, posted adjustments. Those would be any adjustments that we identified through the audit process and were significant enough or material enough to be required to be posted. There were none of those. The waived adjustments would be anything that we identified as a misstatement or adjustment that was maybe a little bit lesser amount that you could choose to waive, and there were none of those either. So really no misstatements of any type through the audit process. And then the other communications, just a variety of things. Again, no disagreements, no difficulties that we incurred through the audit process. Just a very smooth and clean audit process. So thank Emily and David especially for the assistance throughout the process to get the audits completed and the certification. Any questions for me?
All right. If I have no questions, I'll entertain a motion to accept the auditor's reports.
So moved.
I've got a motion.
David has to abstain.
Second.
All right. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Yep. Three.
Note the extension. Note the extension,
please. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, the final item on our agenda is at B4, acceptance of the 2019-2020 first quarter statement of revenues and expenditures.
So, I think as I talked about at one of the prior meetings, Lisa McKinney and I had talked about this report needing a lot of work, and the report itself really wasn't telling us much, especially when you just have 1 year. And so you all will see from the report that we've added the prior year, so you have a comparison from prior year. And then we also reformatted it so that the expenditures are shown in the same way that our financial statements are shown by PCS code, which is a program classification structure. Again, standard way that your financial statements are made and a lot of financial reporting that we do to the state. Yeah, I think this gives you a little more information. My goal is with the new budgeting software, one of the things that I'm really excited about is the reporting capability out of it. I think it will give the board a much better flavor as to the financial condition of the university. It also does forecasting for us, so we would be able to forecast through the end of the year. And I just think those type of capabilities, that we've, beyond the capabilities that it's going to give the deans and the provost, in the RAMP model, I think the financial modeling and reporting is going to be really, really very good for particularly the board. So tuition and fees, looking at the report, it appears as if they're tracking slightly below prior year. The reason that is that we started the semester a week later than last year. So in December of last year, we had already collected some spring tuition that had not been collected in this year. So again, something I told Klaus yesterday is that tuition and fee line in the revenue, we're a tuition dependent university. So that's the number that if there's any problems going to keep me up at night. In the fall, it looked as if we were tracking very closely to budget, and we ended up very, 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 really spot on budget. And that's because of the looking at, rather than headcount, looking at net tuition revenue and the great job that our enrollment management folks did in recruiting more out-of-state students. So the word that I had got from Brian is that the spring looks healthy enrollment, so I would expect as we monitor budget versus actual every month, that we'll get a better idea of how we're tracking for the year as we move along through the year. But for now, the second quarter, that slightly below is really an issue of timing with tuition.
But it is the same percentage of budget as 2018. Yeah.
So. I mean, it's very close, but the actuals would, if we had started the semester, if we had started the semester the same time we had last year, you would have seen more actuals. State appropriation is on target. We're the second quarter allotment draw. We're now at 55%, so we're on track there. Other revenues, again, rather than a few timing issues, we're on track. And again, the other revenue category is primarily made up. Athletics is in there. A lot of your revenue-dependent programs are in there. So if their revenue is not on track, their expenditures would be down as well. So they would offset one another from a financial statement perspective. Restricted grants and contracts, slightly lower than prior year, again, due to timing. And auxiliary, again, some timing issues. Expenditures, unrestricted, tracking with the prior year second quarter, we're at 44.6% of budget. The good news of that is that you would think at the second quarter, if you were spending all of your budget, you would be at 50%. So that's good that we're tracking below. But I know that I really want to push hard the university, so be patient with me as I, as the provost and I look at positions. I really want to push hard for the remainder of the 6 months to really, really push hard to save as much money as we can. And again, the restricted, they're driven by the revenue we receive. And the auxiliary, it's really good, is the expenditures are 3.5% below what they were last year. So I think overall, we seem to be tracking well at the second quarter. It's just going to be important for us to put up a, like I said, the last 6 months, it's just making sure that we're managing our budgets very, very closely and monitoring on a monthly basis. I think that's all I have.
Susan, can I say something?
No.
So what's happened over the past few years is that as we become more and more cognizant of how we spend our money, a lot of times we just say, well, we're not going to do this. Like, we're sitting on positions. We haven't made decisions about filling positions because we're not sure if it's necessary, if now is the time. We want to wait for the Simpson Project report to see if if the salaries are correct, right? So we're not spending that money, but what the result is going to be is that our carry forward, it's going to be reflected in the carry forward. Because if we don't spend those dollars, next year we're going to come back with another $30 million and you're going to go, well, why aren't we spending our money? But it's all part of this transition, I think, to the new budget model and thinking about how we use our dollars. And not spending it in one place doesn't mean that we won't ultimately make a decision about it, because really this is an opportunity for us to take those dollars and put them in a place where, to move them to a place where maybe we get a better return on the investment when we spend it there. So I guess I just wanted to say that about the carry forward, because I know a lot of that comes from academic affairs, but a lot of it is because we have been very careful in how we spend our money, rather than buying t-shirts and paper at the end of the year. You know, you don't want to do that. That feels to me like an irresponsible thing to do, but then we've got these unfilled positions, lapsed dollars are represented in those carry forward numbers. And then commitments that we make that cross over the fiscal year are in there as well. So startup packages for recruiting new faculty, grants for RCAP and FUSE projects, all that stuff carries over the fiscal year, so we have those dollars still sitting there. And it appears to be extra, it appears to be carried forward when actually it's committed. I just wanted to say that.
Any further questions or discussions on this action item? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. We have, does anybody want to take a break? You can go on for a little while.
No.
Are you going to power through?
We've just got one more item.
We've just got one more item. Very good.
Thank you, Brian.
Look, I'm excited today to introduce Robert Unsell. Robert wears many hats within the Division of Enrollment Student Experience. Most importantly, he's the director of our student Accessibility Resource Center, but he's also the individual, come on up, Robert, our director for strategic planning and innovation. We have been working and developing a esports team for the last several years, and I thought it would be very appropriate to ask Robert to kind of talk about that and introduce some of our students that are involved with that program.
PowerPoint going here. And thank you. Good mid-morning afternoon to everybody. I'm just going to spend the next 90 to 120 minutes. No.
We've like been given strict instructions.
Strict instructions. No, I'm going to try to quickly get you kind of up to speed about our esports program. And then we've been lucky. We put out a call to our players to show up. And we've had four of our student players slash coaches slash administrative group here. And so I'll kind of walk you through it, and then they can share their experience. So just to kind of let you know, right now, our program has 31 students involved, most of which are on scholarship. It's led by myself and then Dr. Patricia Todd from the College of Business. She is a good faculty support and asset to us. And I want to talk to you a little bit about our teams. So the program overall has 31 students, but we compete in three games, and they are Overwatch, Rocket League, and League of Legends. And to keep this short, I'll just kind of give you a brief overview of what they are, and then if you have more questions, we'll do them at the end. Overwatch is a game where it's a first person capture the objective. So our team works together, going through maps, looking through the eyes of the actual characters to either capture a flag or to defend a target. League of Legends is a top-down strategy game. And so our team works together, again, working through a map in a capture the flag type of environment. Each of the players play a different role, and together when they achieve that game, they kind of get victory. And then our most complicated is Rocket League, which is soccer with cars. And so this is where we are competing. Now, when we say this, we're competing digitally. And so we have our esports arena graciously hosted now by Housing and Residence Life in McCormick Hall. We have 24 machines down there. Our players meet down there, and they compete together online against other academic institutions in different conferences and tournaments that have been set up. When we look at what are the goals, our players' goals many times are to win the game. They want to bring prestige to the university. We have some rivalries with one pointed ones with LSU over a gaming dispute a couple last season. So our players want to beat them really bad, of course. But for us as a division, our goals are also in the recruitment and retention space. And so let's take a look at this. From fall to spring, we've had 96% retention for our players. Now, we do have a couple players that have some academic challenges, and we'll be addressing that in the spring. But overall, the program is driving students to come back to Western Kentucky University. To go a little bit further, our average GPA for our program was 3.0 last semester. So our team, our players are performing, I guess, in the digital arena, and they are also performing here on campus. And then finally, our recruitment efforts are gearing up with our tryouts on February 28th, the first of three different tryouts that will occur on Saturdays, and we have a recruitment visit on the 21st. Our team, some of these folks, are also meeting with admissions later today to help us fully flush out this recruitment schedule for this year. And then in future years, we plan on moving this earlier and earlier and earlier as we turn kind of this passion for gaming into an infrastructure for success. And so with that said, I want to talk about two more things. One, connectedness. This whole program arose from a club idea back in 2014 that then grew in strength to an esports idea 3 years ago. And it's mostly for a population of students that exist on our campus. They perform well, but they do struggle with connectedness given their interest and the university's traditional offerings of opportunities to get connected. So the niche we are trying to fulfill is keeping these students who want to be here connected to the university and growing this out to where folks who don't feel like they have a place where they can fit in directly will have a place where they can fit in directly. And to further that, I'm going to ask our coach of League of Legends, Jessica Manro, to come up and talk a little bit about the sisterhood grant that's along the same vein.
All right. My name is Jessica Manro, and I was working very closely with Dr. Patricia Todd and trying to figure out if we could do some research on gender equity within the collegiate esports scene and seeing how we can have a more inclusive and diverse space within the esports program here at WKU. And so we decided to approach the sisterhood and seeing if they would allow us to apply for a grant. And we were very fortunate that we did get the grant, and I'll explain a little bit about what we had applied for. So we had noticed that there is a problem in collegiate esports with inclusiveness and diversity in regards to females coming and playing for collegiate teams. And we decided that we would set this up in two parts. The first part is research, where we would go across the nation to different institutions and see how they foster diversity, how they foster inclusiveness. And we would come back, and in the second part, we would take that to action here on campus and become a forefront university in driving this within our program. The second part of that action was we were going to make a Women in Esports, I guess it would be a club, that would go alongside with the program. So we are very excited to get started with the research, and we are excited to get started with creating that opportunity for women here on campus and for many other students here on campus to be a part of that. Thank you.
I skipped the slide. I'm going to go back to it. The one thing I also want to talk about is our focus on making sure that we are getting our students something out of it outside of just the competition. So these games require a lot of teamwork, collaboration, and a development of leadership skills. We are creating opportunities for our players to transition just from competitors to team captains and potentially player coaches as they move through this process, so we can facilitate skill development and all those other things. And I will say to you this, the leadership is not only what we're teaching, but it's also a role we're playing in the state and in the region. Dr. Todd and I have been working with other schools who are interested in starting these programs. We have moved into, I think we have a bit of a first mover advantage with esports when it comes to the scene in Kentucky. There's only one team that really has an established program, and it's not to the scale of Western Kentucky University in terms of student population. And in the region, we are moving forward. So as we think about what esports means at WKU, it is A, an opportunity for our students to get connected. It's an opportunity for us to teach leadership and critical thinking. And it's also an opportunity for us to stand out on the regional stage as a university that is innovating in the places where students want to be. And so what I'd like to do is I'll bring our players up here. I'll introduce them. You too, Thomas. So, so this is John Hay. I'm sorry, John. A little nervous, you know. I watch The Crown. When you address the monarch, sometimes you get a little jumpy.
Yeah.
Later, we'll introduce themselves and tell their role with our program. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is John Hasner. I've been a part of the program. This is my fourth semester now. I'm currently on our A team for our Overwatch team.
I'm Haley Ray. This is my second semester on the team, and I'm on the B team, hopefully the A team soon, of our Overwatch team.
My name is Thomas Candler. I joined in fall of 2017 as a player, then moved up to a coach for my senior year, and now I'm the graduate assistant who helps coordinate our three teams and coaches.
And not to forget Jessica over there, who's also in our doctoral program here at WKU.
Yes, I'm in the organizational leadership program here at WKU, and this is my mini year. I don't know however many years we've had this program active. So thank you.
Where are you all from and what are you majoring in?
So I'm from Louisville, and then I heard about this school and my senior year of high school and came here, loved this place so much. And then my major is paralegal studies. I am actually applying for law school here for next semester.
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and my major is management with a concentration in HR.
I'm from Princeton, Kentucky, a small town farther west of here, and I am currently in the graduate program for student affairs. Stuck around because of the impact that esports have had on me and wanting to continue to pursue this.
What do you find most enjoyable about the esports?
Other than the game, obviously, which we play a lot of, it's kind of like the friendships that you make within that, because the people that are on the team now, many of them were on the team last semester, and we've kind of like really created a bond together. Every single week we hang out outside of practices, we are in constant communication with one another, and it kind of feels like I've created some really, really good relationships with some people that I never would have met otherwise, and I'm actually living with three of the people on the team because we all decided to get an apartment together because we just really like being around each other.
I would agree because it's more than just the in-game and the in-practice time because the people on the team will go to the gym together, we'll study together, we'll grab food together. And so, as Mr. Unzel is talking about, this is a community where sometimes it's hard to reach out because everything you do is online, but it gives you an opportunity to make real in-person connections to people. And if college is lonely, it can be, and so it gives you a group of people that love the same thing as you.
I would echo exactly what they said. I mean, I've stuck around for about 3 years now, made friends with a lot of the players whenever I started in undergrad. And then moving up, I just really grew a passion for this program. And also it kind of, for me, like going into student affairs, it showed me the how helpful a community can be and how helpful that support can be when you're an undergrad that I hadn't really considered before because I'd done, like, freshman, sophomore year, I'd been very alone on a lot of things that went through it, and it helped a ton junior and senior year, and I just wanted to continue to, you know, help that this program for that because there's a lot of people like me that wouldn't really consider a lot of other programs that we have, but something like this is something that kind of takes a lot of people who usually spend more introverted time and gets them in a community.
I like everything I hear about this, and I remember reading several years ago how important this was as a means of learning, too, so it's really fascinating to hear you all talk. The picture does not reflect diversity in the group, though. Any comments about that?
Well, about a year and a half ago, when we had kind of revitalized the team, because during the transition between presidents and all, the team got lost in the shuffle a little bit. Dr. Cavoni and Brian both made an effort to bring this team back to life in full footage and to finance it. So we took kind of our leadership last year to give you a sense of what we came from. Last year we had one program that we called our premier program, was our Overwatch team. Overwatch is a game where six players compete. And so you have an A team and then you have a B team, so you can have scrimmages and practice. For the most part, that team was all male, and we may have had one student that we would traditionally call a minority student on that team at some point. And I think they may have left before we actually started.
I believe we had two at that time.
We had two at that time. Okay. So we decided then that it was not only important to us as a university that values diversity to make an effort, but it's also important for the longevity of the program to make moves in that arena. So things we've done is we've grown the size of the team. We've made an active effort to recruit folks who do not look like the current team, because we want the aspirational team we have is one that is reflective of our values here, diversity. Dr. Todd, myself and Jessica, and I think Thomas was around, made an effort that women in esports would become one of the founding principles of the esports effort. So Dr. Todd and Jessica whipped together a grant, Sisterhood grant, as funding us on that. The student organization is the second half of that piece. And the other thing that we learned from the club before we had a formal esports team is that in a lot of these games, especially Overwatch, where you have to pay to play, some of our students haven't made that investment to be competitive, but they do still have a passion for gaming. And so the other thing we're trying to reestablish is to get the club going again, to get the folks who may not have had the money. The machines we play on are not what you pick up at Best Buy. They're very expensive machines. We've had to have data in that space upgraded to support the competitive load. And so for a lot of players are in high school or at home, unless they have family that makes that financial investment, they don't get to play at a competitive level. So what we need is we're going to create another club to go along. So folks who didn't have the money to play at that level before can come here and use our machines when we're not using it and be a part of this community. Because we have to grow it not only in the competitive realm, but also in the student success realm and the student involvement realm.
Did you create like an intramural sports league where you the students could create teams and compete against each other?
We're working on that. You know, when we think about our ambitions, we have met with our folks down at campus recreation and wellness about kind of creating an intramural sport league. To be honest, we're trying to figure out how to manage it. Something you should know about esports is, unlike other competitive collegiate play, we don't necessarily have a national organization we can tap into for everything. So for example, the organization that we conduct our tournaments through Overwatch with is different than the one we use for League of Legends or for Rocket League. And even within the state, a lot of it is piecemeal and kind of pulled together just by the ambitions and passions of our players and our coaches. And so as we're trying to build out that infrastructure, we think intramural play is a big part of it. It's just trying to manage time and resources to get us there. But that is on our roadmap. It's a
great idea. How do you choose what games you're going to concentrate on?
I wish there was a clean answer to that. So Overwatch was one of our legacy games from the program before, and so we stayed with it. During our Overwatch tryouts, there became a groundswell in the community for Rocket League. And so we thought, let's adopt a Rocket League team, and those were our two teams last year. At the end of last year and the beginning of this year, we took a look at what was happening in the high school athletic space, and they are competing in both Rocket League and League of Legends. And we had a League of Legends team before. That's initially where we started. That team had fallen off, and we decided to bring that team back because we do feel like we need to be aligned with what's happening in the high school athletics in Kentucky. Is to be something that can be sustainable. Now, when we look at other games, we do look at the games not only based on how competitive they are, but also if the games reflect a value that's indicative of the university. So there are some games that have a lot of support, but the way that the gameplay is conducted and the characters in the game, it gets into areas that we don't feel like are in line with our values, and so we do not compete in those games. So we kind of take it case by case. As the sport evolves and as the program evolves, we probably will make game changes and what direction we're going, but we are always trying to keep our eyes open to figure out what positions us well as a university and what also maintains the community environment that we're trying to have with our players.
I just want to say something really quick, if I can. I had Dr. Todd for a marketing class last semester, who is one of the coaches. And Dr. Todd is an amazing individual who really talked a lot about the program as a whole. And I think this is a tremendous opportunity for our students. And as you all can see from the numbers displayed on the screen, an effective retention tool for students as well. This is something that, you know, it's new to a lot of people, but people in my generation, this is a very, you know, common thing. You know, gaming is a huge industry and a very large untapped market for universities. So I think it's amazing that we offer this program. And Dr. Todd's even expanding this on the institutional level, where next semester she'll be offering a marketing gaming class, which is going to be quite interesting. 100% intent on enrolling in that course. And I think it's a neat tool for our students to have. So it's an amazing program, and I'm very glad that you are at the board meeting today, and thank you all for attending.
Yeah, I have two sons who play these games, and so I'm somewhat familiar with that. They try to recruit me to play with them, and it makes me feel old and slow. Because I also teach a lot of the Kaplan students, and there I would think that at least a third of them, if not half of them, are actually playing one of those three games. I don't know if you have reached ever out to the Kaplan Academy.
Well, I'm glad you brought them up. The Kaplan Academy made good portion of our team last year and the year before.
The year I joined, I was the only non-Gatton student on the team at the time.
Well, and to go along with that, we were able to retain a couple of those Gatton students to come back to WKU the following year. And they told us the differentiator for them was the esports community. And so we're always looking out for the Gatton folks to come and join us. You know, it gets a little tricky with them because they have pros weekend. So other than that, they're well.
The other question I have, what type of scholarships are you actually offering for this program?
So right now we do a $1,500 one-year scholarship for our players, $750 in the fall and $750 in spring. We're probably going to stay at that level. For our player coaches, we do a little bit more because they make a bigger investment in the program and they help us lead it. And then, of course, Thomas is a graduate assistant through our program.
Okay.
Very, very quick comment. I was at a national conference in D.C. earlier this week, and we, the Pew Research tied to gaming has hit our radar. 5 years ago, the percentages were much different than they are today, and the most significant change has been in the growth of women that have identified as gamers. Now, this is just a coincidence that I got this. So we are very interested in this market segment. I applaud the effort to go for the Sisterhood grant because that represents data that I just heard 3 days ago. Also, it looks like we are recruiting students in the proper geography based on this availability, because you've got Louisville, Nashville, Princeton, so we're covering small towns, metropolitan areas, large growth areas, and I applaud the efforts on gender and equity and diversity in that growth path. So it fits with the national data that I heard earlier this week.
If I may, I had the great pleasure of going to visit a practice earlier in the fall semester. This is not Pong or Atari, I can guarantee you. They were very patient with me, but it is an incredible group of young people that we want to grow exponentially over time. When you think about the work that we're doing as an institution around creating anchors, social integration, academic integration, how it all works together. And I think what you heard there is the precursor to the first year village. Imagine a living learning community where these young people are in the same physical space. They have peer mentors, they have faculty advisors, they engage in the same things. And it's for a population of students that sometimes, we had a conversation when I visited, can feel isolated. And creating opportunities for them outside of electronic engagement to have personal relationships that are good for their mental health, for their academic success, and for their retention.
It's exactly the work that we've done in other areas as well. And so as a self-proclaimed, by myself and others, nerd, investment in forensics, in our journalism and media programs. You think about band as a tool for recruitment and retention, esports. Everything that we do as an institution is focused on the success of our young people and recruiting more of them. And this is a competitive advantage for WKU. It's creating a platform for us to talk nationally about what this means in the future of both competition, but also higher education. And I'm thankful for all of the work that's happened in student experience, but also for the investment of time and energy of our players, too. And we're trying to get them gear so they can walk around campus with esports all over them and backpacks and stuff.
Again, forming those relationships, and they can be student, faculty, student, student, whatever, but that is the key to a lot of things in life, and certainly retention. I would be very curious to know what percentage of that group were night owls and what percentage.
And I bet most of them were night owls. Do you all sleep at night?
Yeah. I really like night.
Good, they're sleepers.
Well, maybe they're morning larks. Anyway, that's time for study.
I will tell you that the amount of caffeine that I saw consumed in that room, though, I felt very much at home. I don't know who we're going to get to sponsor the team, but we have lots of opportunity there, certainly with caffeinated beverages and other sponsors.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions? I'm going to thank everyone. Thank you all for coming. This is what it's all about. I always say I'm the chair of the best committee that reports to the Board of Regents because we get to see students. Robert, you did a great job.
Thank you.
In fact, and actually, Dr. Boney, he was talking about Monarch. Doing a present was really about me and not about you. And Bob, thank you.
I don't deal with
those politics. I'm teasing you. And Brian, thank you as always. I don't know how you could possibly retire in 5 months. We have this going on. I'm sure it's going to be
fun. We have good people like Robert. It's, yeah.
Well, thank you all. You just made my day. Thank you.
All right, that concludes our business.
We do have lunch if anyone would like to grab lunch outside.